The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to Unsound Methods with me, Lachlan Bloom.
And me, Jamie Batchett.
For those of you listening to the podcast for the first time, this is part of a series where we talk to fellow writers about their process and technique.
So this is the August episode of Unsound Methods, and we've got a very interesting guest for you this week, Natasha Brown, the author of Assembly, which is out now. It's a good book to take away on holiday, I'd say. Not necessarily a beach read, whatever the baggage of the meaning of beach read is. But it's a very punchy, very interesting short book. So, you know, if you go into a beach and reading and you like what we do in Unsound Methods, I think it'd be right up your street.
Depending on the amber green level in your area.
You could still go to a beach in an amber or a red country if you wish. Obviously, I hope everyone's keeping well. Yeah, pack a copy of Assembly along with a copy of Siphonophore in the Wave, and I think you'll be set up for a great beach reading holiday.
So we had a good chat with Natasha last month, and talked about her process and how workshopping the early stages of the novel helped give it shape and form.
Yeah, she sort of talks about how she attended a few different classes with different groups of people, and that really sort of brought through the ideas and added a lot of strength to the writing.
So without any further ado, we give you Natasha Brown.
Assembly is your debut novel, and as I understand it, you've come from quite a different route into writing to a lot of the people that we speak to. So I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about how you got to this point.
Sure. Yes, I guess I didn't ever really see myself as a writer. I didn't have any ambition to publish a book. I've always been a reader, and I've really enjoyed reading since childhood. And it was really only in the last few years, there were some ideas I wanted to explore, a lot of nonfiction I was doing. And I got the idea that a good way of exploring, I guess, the nature of fiction was to kind of try and do it from the inside. So I started writing a bit of fiction that was intentionally a little bit self-aware or metafictional. And over sort of the course of a year and a half, it turned into Assembly.
Were you reading things that were quite formally innovative as well? Was that where your taste had taken you?
Yeah, I think a bit. I think where it came from was, it was really the last few years that I started reading contemporary fiction as it was published. And I became quite interested in the relationship, I guess, between society and the stories that we tell and how we get the sort of fiction that we get. And in order to understand this a bit better, I started broadening out my nonfiction reading. So reading some literary criticism, starting to get an understanding of the foundations as well, like some linguistics, some semiotics, stuff I hadn't really touched before. And I got quite into a lot of these ideas and just postmodernism in general and poststructuralism. And all of this kind of turned into some slightly bizarre ideas that I sort of hooked onto a story.
How then was the sort of process of putting the book together from that then? Were you reading things with the intention that you were writing notes at the time that were going to inform something? Or was it just you looked back and realised you'd just written notes that had caught your eye?
I think it was really the former. I was really trying to write in a way that drew attention to the artifice of being a novel, I guess, and also the choice of language that's being used. I think I became quite interested in this idea of whether or not language is neutral. And I kind of land on the side of it not really being neutral, but was looking to find a way to explore that that didn't. I felt like in order to understand some of the things I was interested in, I had to do a lot of background reading, and I wanted to find a way to explore these ideas within a more approachable way, in a more engaging way. So a lot of, I guess, the focus on the perspective and the choice of language, I was really trying to draw attention to some of those things to kind of question, I guess, just the feeling I got as a reader consuming stories, where I often wasn't reading them so critically and asking how I was being influenced by the choices the writer was making.
Do you feel that your the opinions you were developing about things like the neutrality of language, do you feel that in the reading and then writing of it, your feelings changed or developed in any significant way? I mean, did you discover some truths that you weren't aware of at the start?
I probably discovered, I'm not sure there are any truths.
That's useful to me.
I found it was really interesting. I read something that Phoebe Waller-Bridge said about, I think, an exercise she'd done in theatre where they'd write short scenes and get the audience to hold up cards, sort of showing what their emotion was in the response to it. And they did a lot of that to kind of, I guess, improve their way at creating certain emotions. And I think I just became really interested in writing very short things and understanding how they landed and how I could adjust how I'd written it to make it land slightly differently. And also really trying to read and understand the things I'd enjoyed, ask how they'd achieve that effect, trying to write in other writers' voices a bit and just really get a sense of how language is working and how it was landing.
Mm-hmm. And did you do a lot of writing of sort of short stories or anything like that to get your flow and your voice down? Or is this kind of what you started working on and it ended up being a novel from the start?
Yeah, some initial short stories. And I think I'm definitely much more, Assembly's written mostly in the first person, but I'm much more comfortable in the third person and writing in a more distant way. So that was how I started writing. It was really a lot of description, trying to kind of capture settings, exploring different characters. And I approached Assembly really by kind of creeping in on it. So figuring out the scenes, the settings, the different characters, how their stories all fit together. And then the narrator, who in retrospect sort of seems like the driving force, she was really the thing that fit in between all these other characters.
Did that then involve quite a lot of planning with setting? I mean, was that trying different things until you knew what felt right in terms of the narrator's voice? Or was that, I mean, did you have flip chart sheets up or whiteboards or anything like that?
I had a lot of color-coded index cards spread out everywhere, a lot of different configurations. And I think one of the things that was key to me was, particularly when at some points it reads perhaps more like a straightforward story, at other points it kind of steps away from the story a bit, but I wanted to make sure it was checking in with sort of all of the right themes or ideas that had been seeded earlier, to make sure it didn't go too far without referencing them again, and each scene or each fragment was doing enough with respect to enough of those different things. I guess the screenwriting advice to make sure no scene is just doing one thing, it's doing multiple things. So I really tried to keep that in mind and make sure that even if it didn't always have a straightforward narrative feel, you felt as though you were making progress on the ideas it was raising.
You were saying about the sort of screenwriter's advice and stuff. Is that, I mean, do you feel you've come to this with an interest in other art forms as well and how they're put together?
Yeah, I think definitely, like, a lot of curiosity. I read a ton of craft books. I know some people say not to do that, but I definitely did. And I found some of the screenwriting books, one piece of advice that seems to keep coming up was just this idea of structure and the emotional journey that you have to take the viewer on. And I think that was something I noticed. I don't watch a ton, like a huge amount of television or film, but one thing I've noticed, particularly with film, is it can be quite experimental, but it can still feel very satisfying and audiences can still enjoy it. And I sort of came to the view that it was because it was hitting the right emotion beats. And I think that was a big thing I learned from just the screenwriting approach. If you give the reader the right emotional journey, they'll kind of cut you a bit of slack, hopefully, with some of the more experimental elements.
And how did you, what sort of system, you mentioned you had color-coded cards, what did you attach the color to? How did you sort of structure that system for creating the work? Was that something that you came across in one of the craft books and it was a system that was already established, or was it something you had to kind of experiment with and find what worked for you, how to relate colors to, you know, emotions or whatever structure you ended up using?
Yeah, it was a bit of a mix. I was trying all sorts of different things. I think once I had the overall structure of the story in place, as in what plot elements were going to take place, and I knew some of the ideas that had kind of been hinted at earlier on, I wanted to have the narrator explore them in a more direct way, because in the beginning she's very passive and towards the end she develops some subjectivity and starts sort of addressing the reader almost directly. So I wanted to make sure that the colours were kind of the sort of, I'm talking particularly at the end, she leaves this garden and it turns into almost a lyric essay, a fictional lyric essay. And so the colours were sort of the high level, what is the thematic link of this section? And then I sort of had sticky notes that I was attaching to them with different colours if they linked back to other ones. And I was really trying to make sure at that point it was quite visual, just making sure it wasn't going too long without touching back on one of the other ones and making sure everything was touching enough things, figuring out where I needed to, where I had gaps. You know, I was doing too big a leap and I needed to fill in some kind of filler, but also in places where I felt it was over explaining or over just delivering. So kind of pulling back a bit there too and making sure I wanted it to feel very interactive while you're reading it, and not that it's kind of attempting to lecture you or convince you of anything, but it's just kind of throwing out ideas in a way where the links are sort of implied. So really trying to get that balance right and then making those adjustments, writing the new bits, printing it all out. I've probably harmed a lot of trees. And attacking it again, sort of reading through, making sure it flowed okay, updating my index cards. I had these big, I'd stand up on my step stool, take a photo from above of all the index cards and playing around with those different ideas. So because I felt at first I was very much focusing on the computer, but it wasn't easy to get an overall view of how that section was working. And it seemed to me that to kind of get the overall picture, this plan would help. I don't know if it was necessary, but it kind of was a way for me to reason about the writing, I suppose. Mm.
And did that stay through until the very end? You were sort of editing and then adjusting the index cards, writing some more, changing bits, going back and changing again. Did you come to an end where you didn't need the index cards anymore and you were purely editing, or was that the end of the process entirely?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there was a point where I sort of approached it in four different sections and I worked on each section largely individually. And then once I had the overall thing, that was when I got a lot of, so I was workshopping it the whole time through and getting feedback and adjusting things. But once I had an overall, I guess, manuscript, I got some beta readers who hadn't read it before to get just an absolute fresh take, because that was really helpful to understand where the story wasn't quite balanced, where something was a bit confusing, or what was landing really well, where I could lean in a bit more. And then I think that was more of a general kind of overall structural edit, kind of really just fine-tuning it, because I know my approach, I'll spend forever on the comma placement in one sentence, which is all well and good, but I don't think most people really worry about it when they read it. So it was definitely helpful to then step back from it and get some fresh eyes on it and understand how it's working as an actual story, because that's the overall effect, you know, how it lands when you read the whole thing. It was different sorts of changes then, a bit more of this character, a little bit of explanation here, you know, linking these a bit more, this sentence is tripping someone up, those kinds of things.
And did it change your perception of the themes at all when you got that feedback? Were there any sections where you thought, this section, that's really touching on this theme, it's really explaining what I think about X, and then you got the feedback from the readers and that wasn't what they were getting at all, and you had to change that section, or you reappraised what the theme that you'd initially thought you were exploring, you changed it to something subtly different?
I think that's really interesting. I think the thing about it is I don't really see it as having too many strong opinions or views in terms of how it's presented. So what I was really happy with was when, you know, I got an edit back and someone was arguing with what the character was doing, because then I felt right, like it's actually functioning as a story. It's not just too, in its own world. And, I've described it as a conversation before, and I really do think that's how I intended it to kind of work, as almost a conversation starter. It's just kind of exploring some ideas, but not trying to communicate them in too strong a way. And I also felt it was quite just interesting to see writing, particularly from perhaps not the standard, if you're thinking of like English fiction, not the standard perspective, you kind of have to do some work to get the reader up to speed of what the perspective is and who the character is and how they function in the world. So it was interesting and helpful to see how it landed with different sorts of people bringing different experiences to it, because people will get different things out of it. And I was really happy with managing to keep it not too long. I didn't want it to get lengthy, but having enough in there that people could find some element of it that spoke to them.
It's a short novel, but it's got a lot of stuff in it. Yeah, that speaks to how much you've worked on it as well. I thought, and the sort of investigation of the power dynamics in it is very interesting, especially as it all falls to sort of one character to be on one end of those dynamics. That felt interesting that it's kind of political with a small p because of that.
Yeah, and I was really fascinated with just how things become politicized and what we consider political versus what we consider personal. You know, it's not a science. It's kind of how things have been socialized. And that was really something that sort of fascinated me and I wanted to explore a bit.
And was it intentionally quite a short I mean, you said you wanted to make sure it didn't get too long, but did you, from the beginning, did you really have an idea that it would be something that you could, if you were minded to, really sort of sit down and read in one or two sittings?
Yeah, the one sitting thing's been quite interesting because how I'd originally structured it, it had the same, essentially, flow, but it was much less clear that it was all one sort of continuous time period. And that was a change I made sort of as I was getting towards the end of it, making it a bit clearer what the times were, that this all happened over, you know, just a couple of days, which I think made it feel more intense. And the narrator is never still. She's just always moving all the way through. So I think it sort of propels you forwards. But that was kind of, I think I'm glad I made that change, but it hadn't been how I'd originally viewed it. I knew I wanted to keep it relatively short. I didn't know exactly how long, right from the beginning, for a few reasons. I feel this kind of a character, if you spend too long with her, because she's so passive and we don't learn much about her at all. We just really learn how other people are responding to her and how they're viewing her. I think it just gets a bit too frustrating as a reader to be inside a character who's not doing anything. I think you can only sustain that for so long. And then the other side of it, I was very interested in Roland Barthes has an essay, Myth Today, where he talks about myth as politicized speech and kind of appropriated speech that's used to transform history into something that doesn't seem done, it seems natural. And he talks a lot about the novel as a form of meta-myth, so taking myths that have been made out of other imagery, other speech, and creating a new myth out of that, sort of built from those myths. I'll explain this somewhat well. One of the things I found quite interesting was he talked about caricature and keeping it very light and very short, because the more you explain it, the less effective it is as myth. And I think that really resonated with me, the way he described that. And I felt that was something I wanted to achieve. Some of the characters, I hope they don't seem wholly like caricature, but they are created in quite broad strokes. But I think it helps to make it a bit more effective as an appropriation of characters we've already seen.
Did you find that sort of contrast between the sort of lightness of character you're talking about there, and I'd imagine there was a sort of urge to sort of get into some of the heavier, meatier topics and take a more non-fiction approach and sort of explore those on the page, which I can add a sort of certain weight that is in contrast to the sort of lighter aspects. Was that something you find in conflict while you were writing, that you'd sort of write a page and think, oh, this is great, and read back and it go, oh, no, that's getting quite heavy and prosy and it's bogging the character down?
Yeah, I think actually I probably erred too much on the other side, because for me, I'm not so interested in having those discussions and in talking about those things. I'm interested in the meta discussion of, is our language fit for purpose when it comes to having the sorts of conversations that, you know, have been going on for quite a while now. So for me, it was almost I had to proactively dip back into, I guess, the topical things to kind of tie it to something. You know, the story, for me, I felt I had to make sure the story was satisfying and there was a story there, but I wasn't especially interested in it. It's more of a vehicle for evaluating how the story's being told. You see what I mean?
Was it a fairly one-off approach for writing this novel? I mean, if you're approaching a new project, would you tackle things the same again? Would you have the index cards ready and have a refined process for it, or would it be, was it something quite unique to writing this novel? You feel the way you went around it, and writing something in future would be, it's something you'd have to start from scratch?
Yeah, I think definitely. I haven't been writing very long, so this kind of approach evolved as I was writing assembly, and I think I definitely want to keep iterating on and improving how I write. So I don't know that I would. And also, it was just a very big the book is small, but it felt like a very big project to try and figure out how to fit all of these things in and make it work and really condense it. I'm not even sure if it would work for me to approach something new starting that way. So probably not, I think. As well, especially as, you know, writing a novel for the first time, I didn't have any other work published. I don't have, you know, any sort of credentials when it comes to writing. It felt as though it had to be done in a way that seemed confident and seemed competent. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be taken seriously. And I think once you've got something out, people give you a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. So it probably doesn't need to be quite so punchy right from the beginning. And I can probably take a slightly more leisurely approach in a way. Just you have a little bit of goodwill with the reader that they're going to be going somewhere reasonable. Whereas I think for me, I was very aware that, you know, the first sentence, the first paragraph, the first page, you know, it all had to really stand out and convince that actually this narrative will work and you should stick with this character, even if she seems a bit odd.
So it's doing a sort of the job of, yeah, selling it from the off. I think that's probably true. If you've proved yourself in the first one, then you don't have to get the attention quite so much the second time around.
Hopefully people at least spare you a couple of pages before they give up.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure I'm getting the book.
No, but it's getting you. You're almost not recognisable now.
Thank you.
This book is over.
Have you started compiling notes and things for the next one? I appreciate that you're doing the job of promoting your first novel, but I mean, have you started writing notes and you're starting to see what index cards they might flow onto?
Yeah, I'm playing around with characters and ideas. I think nothing, I'm trying not to force it right now, just kind of explore and also just try out different styles of writing. And I think I really missed writing in the third person and just doing a bit more of that. So nothing concrete, just really trying to let it be fun for a while again. There was a time when it was really just iterating on this nonstop, trying to get it exactly right. It is sort of nice to just be able to write about whatever and explore, see where it goes.
Going back to the first one, you said that it was being workshopped from quite early on. Who were you doing the workshopping with?
Yeah, so I did a lot of classes. I think in 2019, I took my first class, which is at Goldsmiths University. They had like a Saturday short story writing class. Oh. It's been quite interesting because it seems a lot of people have taken that class, had a really good experience. I loved it, and it kind of taught me the basics of short story writing and also just writing an assignment every week and sharing it, getting some feedback on it, which was great. And then I did a writer's workshop class at City University, which was much more intensive. And it was sort of longer, I think probably maybe 4,000 words extracts you worked on each time, and a bigger group. And again, that was really, really helpful and just got me writing to a schedule, figuring out how to express what I thought about, you know, a text, and figure out a way that's useful to tell someone. You don't just want, I like that character, I don't like that character. But actually, how do you formulate a useful response that they can then use to improve their writing or what they're trying to do? And at the same time, understanding how to take, okay, like 12 different people's thoughts and find a way of feeding those back in that's helpful and is moving me towards what I was trying to do. So I found that fantastic. And then I applied to the London Writers Awards, which is a writer development program run by Spread the Word. And that was just really fantastic because it was sustained over, I think, about 9 months. And there were a lot of masterclasses, which again were really just on the craft side of things, understanding how that worked, as well as regular workshopping with now a small group of writers who we got to know each other really well. We were all working on longer form projects. And I think it becomes just such a fantastic relationship when, you know, you really understand someone's voice, what they're trying to do, what their perspective is going to be. So I found that so useful to just kind of develop and really get into the flow of writing regularly. And then another class after that, I did a editing, what's it called? editing something course at the Faber Academy, which was once again just so helpful. That was when I had sort of this overall thing, and I was really just trying to get it to, you know, a final submittable form.
You were doing this around a day job as well at the time. So when, I mean, a real sort of practical nuts and bolts question, but like what time in the day were you carving out to write?
Yeah, so 6 to 7 in the morning was my writing hour, and I would typically aim to write 100 words a day on the weekday. Sometimes it would be slightly more. Initially, I was aiming for a sentence a day. I'm a very slow writer. Can't be stressed enough. So that was when, and I'd occasionally write in the evening, but I'd more often be reading in the evenings. And then the weekends, I would, you know, spend as long as I had really on editing, reworking things, thinking about it at a higher level, rewriting some of what I'd written during the week.
And that would be focused each weekend. I mean, I'm sure it's not hard and fast, but that would generally be focused on the 5 days beforehand worth of writing. You'd be editing that again.
Not necessarily, no. It was just kind of approaching the whole thing. Like, you know, early on, it was just kind of a pot of things, and it was trying to figure out, okay, who are the characters? What is happening over this period? How does this story pay off? And then towards the latter half, once I had a pretty clear structure in place, it was making sure, it was sometimes just planning what I needed to write for the next week. So, okay, I have a gap here. I need to tackle this scene. So any research I needed to do that would feed into it, anything I needed to figure out about the characters beforehand, or thinking, you know, this section isn't as strong as I'd like it to be, maybe approaching it from a different perspective, or figuring out how I'd want to change it. And then also just taking, you know, especially when you have quite a few people's feedback, just really going through that, understanding, making a plan of what I wanted to change or try differently off the back of that.
And were you confident from the beginning in your own feelings about it? I mean, when you've got quite a few different people's feedback, did they sometimes really shake something that you thought was definitely already completely correct? Or did you always have a strong sense about, yeah, where you were on the right line and where you weren't?
I think it took a really long time to understand how to make the best use of feedback. And I felt giving feedback as well was really helpful, and just having the conversation to understand the right way around that. I think I've sort of come to looking at it as, you know, nothing's right or wrong. People are responding to what you've written and telling you what response it created in them. And either that's the response you wanted or it wasn't. And then you kind of have to decide, do I want to change how I tackled this? Am I actually happy that I got this different response? So I really started to see it that way.
Were you getting that feedback from people you'd already worked with in the various courses? Like, you find your beta readers through the courses than having workshopped short stories and so on?
So at the end, I found beta readers who I didn't know at all. They didn't know anything about it, totally fresh eyes, which I felt was really helpful, because once you've got to know someone and you've had the conversations with them, you're coming at it from a position of understanding. So I felt it was so key to get that really fresh, cold read from someone who doesn't wish you any ill will or any goodwill. It's just telling you how they found it. So I felt that was super helpful. But through getting to know people over, you know, months or weeks with a workshopping relationship, I felt what was so useful is they could really say, I think you're trying to do this, but to me it kind of came across like that. Or they sort of know your style and they're like, you know, this is your voice creeping in, it's not the character's voice, that type of thing. Or word choices, you know, I'm going to struggle to think of things now, but you know, some of my sort of quirks, if those are coming out, they're much more keenly, you know, going to spot those. So, it, you know, I found it really helpful as time went on. But I think there was that slight fear that they, because they know it and they understand where I'm coming from, they're not the freshest set of eyes when it gets right to the end.
And at what point did you sort of have the start of the novel? Had you already started when you began the first workshop or the first course, or like did you choose to start doing the course in a way to improve the writing of the novel, or did you start the workshops first and then after some time workshopping the novel sort of emerged?
Initially, I just wanted to understand writing a bit better, and it wasn't so much that I wanted to write anything for anyone else to read. I just wanted a better appreciation of how writing works and how language works generally.
When you started the Goldsmiths course, you started first. When you started that, you were just starting it as a way to improve your fiction writing generally.
Yeah, I was, you know, I really wasn't writing fiction before then. It wasn't something that I did, but I wanted to learn how to do it, I guess.
And at what point then did the novel emerge? Was it? Did you? At what point did you think, "Oh, I'm writing a novel," as opposed to doing an assignment for a course?
I think sort of during that second class of the workshopping class, I was starting to come back to various voices and various settings, and I thought, you know, I can kind of see. I wasn't sure if it was a novel or some interconnected stories, that type of thing, but I could see a world kind of taking shape. At that point, I didn't have the narrator's voice at all. It was more of the secondary characters and the spaces that Assembly spans. So at that point, I started to get a sense that probably it was more connected stories I was thinking about then. And then on the London Writers Awards, I think a lot of it was geared towards producing a novel at the end. Some people were doing short stories, but a lot of the advice was shaping it as a novel. And it started to seem to me then that an easier way, well, not easier, but a better way to explore these ideas was, rather than making the form disconnected for the sake of being disconnected, bringing it all together and having this unifying story that has a clear line through, because then I have a bit more flexibility to kind of be a little bit more experimental and do interesting things with the character.
With the level of experimentation and the sort of formal innovation in it, with the very earliest drafts, were you trying things out like that? Or were you writing in a more conventional way and you suddenly felt that the form needed to fit the content as you went on?
Well, I think right from the beginning, one thing that was key to me was I wanted to learn how to write in different ways. I didn't just, you know, want to find my voice or something like that. I wanted to learn how to produce different voices. So I would write a lot in the different characters' voices and trying to find a way. You know, I spent a lot of time thinking about how do you capture someone's voice. You can't just sort of transcribe what they say. That doesn't work. So what is it that you need that gives a sense of them? And then again, how would you write sort of a description of someone, like an artist sketch? How would you do that in a way that tells you about the person? And how, when exactly are you just being descriptive? And when are you kind of pointing the reader in a direction where they're going to start having particular thoughts or expectations around a character? I really wanted to learn how to do these things. So I did a lot of character sketches just to try and get a sense of it, and sort of reading other writers and trying to write in their voice a bit. I really wanted to, and I still do want to, kind of get really precise, I guess, about how I write and how I use words. I think it was because of what I was reading sort of before I started writing. It was a mix of fiction, nonfiction, poetry, kind of everything. It all felt like fair game to use in my writing. And I kind of wanted to choose a form and an approach that hopefully at the end, it wouldn't seem like there was any other way to tell the story. It would seem like that was absolutely how this story had to be told. I didn't want it to be flashy or annoying. I just wanted it to be absolutely perfectly suited to the story, which I am sure I've fallen short of. But I think that was kind of my guiding principle, how I wanted to approach, I guess, the experimental elements.
I'm interested in your character sketches, because I think that seems to be something that artists would do, painters, etc., do sort of work on these things, whereas as writers, we're not encouraged to, and particularly with this sort of imitation of someone else's style. What comprised the character sketches? Was it attempts at voice, or was it sort of biographical information, or a mixture of things?
So a lot of voice, I think. I still am fascinated by how you can tell so much through voice. And you can really give a sense. And, you know, when you're reading something, so you're not even hearing it performed, but you really get a sense of how it sounded and how that person said it and who owned that voice. I think I'm super fascinated with that. And I like reading, scripts, because I think scripts do this really well. And so I started reading a lot of scripts, kind of understand how that, get more of an appreciation of how that's done. And then in terms of I don't think I ever really was super focused on biographical information. I think it was, well, not in itself, but just more how do you suggest biographical information with a physical description? I think like that link was really interesting to me. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that. And, you know, one of the things going back to the workshopping that I found really useful was just to give some questions up front. You don't want to guide people too much, but, you know, what did you think of this character? Oftentimes they'd only have a very small glimpse of them. And it was really interesting to see what sense of the person they got based on the information that I'd given in the description.
On a practical note, when you were writing these sketches or in writing the novel itself, do you write longhand with pen and paper, pencil paper, or is it all in the computer or a mix of both? Do you think that affects how the voice comes across the medium which you're sort of inputting it in?
I think it's a real mix for me. Like, I like to start each day with just 15 minutes of free writing by hand, like the morning pages approach, which I find really helpful just to get into the speed of things and to think about what I'm going to do. And then when I'm working on the 100 words, my preference is to do them sitting at my desk at the computer, but I do sometimes write them by hand. I think it's different. I think probably if I'm writing by hand, I self-edit a lot more because I'm slower. I can type super fast, but I can't handwrite super fast. And I'll tend to cross things out and word things differently. And on the computer, it's a lot faster, and probably the edits are a bit better because you can't really move things around on the page. So it does come out differently. And I think oftentimes I'll write something one way, and then sometimes I'll rewrite it on the computer, not even looking at what I hand wrote, and kind of, you know, leave the comparisons for the weekend. A real mix.
And in terms of finding a voice, it's a mix, I guess, of both, to kind of finally capture a voice.
Yeah, I felt, and again, I don't know how good a technique this is, but I had to sometimes really stick with one character for a while to get into their voice, their style, and just write around them a bit, write a bit from them speaking directly. And I used to like writing like in a third person, but very close to them. So I'm giving a little bit of their thoughts and then zooming out again, spending a lot of time on that character. And then it's only, you know, most of them, a few lines that actually turn up in the novel, but it helped me to really figure out what those few lines should be.
And when you say spending a bit of time, you mean like over a period of 2 or 3 weeks or something, only focusing on that one character? And
yeah, kind of about that. And, you know, writing basic things like, what's it like when they wake up? What do they see when they look in the mirror? How are they describing how their day was? All of this sort of thing. And writing about different scenes from their perspective, that type of, you know, writing exercises, I guess. I found them helpful.
And do you read back what you've written at all? Is there a stage? If you do, I don't know if you do read back at all, but if you do, is there a stage where you get to before you read back, or are you kind of writing a sentence and reading it aloud straight away to see how it sits?
I don't really read stuff aloud much, certainly not while I'm writing. I think that's kind of when I'm largely happy with something, then I'll read it aloud to make sure nothing kind of trips you up, I guess. But yeah, I do, particularly when I'm working on something, I'll sit with whatever the problem is for a while, and I'll just keep writing it different ways and try and pick out the best bits and sort of Frankenstein them together, really.
A point about what you said earlier about with the voice, and how you obviously can't write kind of verbatim what people say in real life. Did you work that out by trial and error, or was that through your just knowledge of the world? It was just obvious that it doesn't work on the page.
It wasn't so much trial and error. It was more, I think, when I started really thinking about books, I started really watching and listening and kind of just thinking about how people talk and listening to how people talk and then seeing what that looks like in a book. It's not the same, which it sounds obvious, but it wasn't exactly obvious to me, I think, because definitely when I read, I just, you know, read and I'm experiencing it. And I think if I were to try and remember what I'd read, it wouldn't have been clear that it was, you know, super condensed, super, you know, precise dialogue, as it often is, not always.
Coming back to your point earlier about the bias in language, I think there's an interesting question of there's the text of the actual words that somebody says, but within what context, and what biases is there on the page? It's going to depend on, you know, the preceding paragraph, the preceding 10 pages, or who the reader feels that character is and why they're saying that, rather than the verbatim words.
And even like verbatim, because, you know, if you see different transcriptions of speeches, sometimes it's a very generous verbatim, kind of cleaning up the ums and the mistakes, and other times it's absolutely verbatim every sound, and that changes how you get, you know, how articulate or intelligent you think a person is. And just kind of bearing that in mind for, you know, if you make a character, what they say is exactly correct, or if you introduce some mistakes into a character's speech, it kind of conveys a whole heap, even without necessarily seeming like you are.
You sort of see it in journalism as well, I think, because obviously a lot of attention's just been on Batley and Spen. And I find it amazing sometimes that some people will write up what people have been saying to them in Vox Pops and kind of put a regional accent into it in a way that I think they'd never do that if they were talking to people in like South London or something. It seems to be making a real judgment about, yeah, how you're going to portray that person.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's so, you know, it's one thing in novels, but I think it really is it's a real forceful thing to do in journalism, because that shapes people's impression of, you know, folks they might not get a chance to speak to directly.
I think it can be hugely biased, and not just in Vox but in politicians, or, you know, people who are actually engaged in the media. The way that it's represented can shift the perception of them completely.
How long was the sort of the process then? Did you say it was in 2019 or something that you started doing the classes, or has it been a bit longer?
Yeah, so I think I probably started working on what was maybe assembly in earnest around summer in 2019, and it finished up towards the end of 2020, I guess.
Deep into the lockdown territory. Good editing time, it might be. Yeah. Some people might find it that
way. A very quick turnaround to be published as well.
It was quick, I think.
Was that surprising? I mean, did you have any sense of the publishing side of things before you finished in the end of 2020?
Well, yeah, I was expecting it to be, you know, a typical 2-year turnaround type of thing. But my editor, Hamish Hamilton Hermione, was, you know, keen and confident that we could do it quickly. So we did. It was a very intense editing period, and I didn't ever really get the point. I was expecting to have a few months away from it and to come back to it fresh. But I pretty much spent a year and a half looking at this thing every day. So it hasn't benefited from any distance.
And how did you find that relationship work once you'd sort of signed a contract and were working with an editor? I guess I don't want to ask you outright if you then had to change a lot, but like how did the relationship work?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting, because I think then you're talking to someone who has as clear a vision for it as you do. And I think what was great, so I was working with Hermione and also Jean at Little Brown, who's publishing it in the States. We all sort of worked on it at the same time. And it was really nice to have, as well as my agent Emma, who worked on it a bit before, to have, you know, three people who all have as strong a view as I have looking at this manuscript and how it's going to become a book. So I think that was super helpful. There weren't sort of massive changes, but I think because it's so short, small changes have a big impact on how it lands and how it sits. And I think it was really nice to get fresh perspective from people who obviously really understand how books work and how it's going to land with readers. So it was a really different experience to, I guess, the writing phase, where there's no one who is really telling you what direction your book should go in. It's kind of, you are the person piloting it. At this point, there's other people who are obviously invested in it. And, you know, I think it made it almost, it felt like much more support, because you're all sort of invested in how this thing's going to turn out. And you are getting sort of a real industry perspective on how this works.
Did anything get changed for the American edition other than spellings? Or
no, so I think not even spellings. I think Jean was quite keen to kind of keep it British, which was nice. I quite like on the American side, like just in terms of talking to Americans about it, they tend to find it quite a British novel, whereas I don't think in Britain it's seen as a British novel.
Yeah, I guess without asking them what they mean by that exactly, it's difficult. You went from quite quickly from having, just in terms of a truncated amount of time frame, from having an agent and having a publisher sorted out pretty quickly. How that must have taken a bit of time. So was it sort of ready to go to an agent after sort of a year of working on it?
Yeah, so I submitted to agents in the summer, I think, of 2020. And then I worked with Emma on it over, I guess, a month and a bit, probably. And it went out, I think the timing was around, was it Frankfurt Book Fair? I don't really understand the specifics of all the timings. And then it got picked up. And so then, yeah, we were just sort of right from pretty much October time working on edits. And finished-ish it by the end of the year, and a couple last. It was interesting sort of speaking to the translators, because they ask sort of very, very precise questions. So a couple more tweets that went in that I got from questions from the translators at the start of the year.
Have you been quite involved with translators through? Have you been quite involved? Is it just a few questions that came in, or has it been a sort of day-to-day process with each translation, working closely with the translator?
I think that the translators, they've all sort of, each one that has contacted me so far has kind of grouped all the questions together, which has been really helpful, because then you can sort of responding them in one bit. And some things were like describing a house, which I've well, I think I described the postcode of a house and what exactly that was conferring to kind of explain that. And some things were sort of really specific questions about word choices and interesting things about how different translations and coming to the title, because the title's quite broad, how that would work in other languages. So it was all really fascinating. And I think it's really amazing to sort of be read that closely, I think, because I guess to translate, it's a really close relationship with someone's work. So it's been really kind of eye-opening to see how it lands. And also some things I'd kind of very clearly had a view, and I'd even sort of written to myself some notes about why exactly I'd made those choices, and other things were a little bit less deliberate, or perhaps they were deliberate at the time and I don't remember it now. So kind of revisiting some of those things and figuring out a case where, oh, actually, this is something I want to tweak, or, oh, no, this is what I meant, and this is kind of how I think about it. I think it's just been really, it was kind of, I didn't realize it was going to be another sort of editorial conversation again, but it's been great.
How are you solving the translation issue with the title? I hadn't even thought about that, but that's very interesting. So how are you finding compromises that work, or is it quite inelegant for some languages?
I don't think I'm in a position to comment on the elegance, because I don't really know any of
that's
the languages.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't want to put you in a very difficult position there.
But I think it's been, because Assembly, you know, I kind of had my reasoning for why that was the title. And so I share that. And then it's kind of interesting to see, you know, I don't think really so far in any of the titles that I've had yet, there's been a one-to-one translation, I guess a word that covers exactly the same stuff that Assembly covers, but which elements they wanted to pull out. So I think in the Dutch and German titles, it's much more about kind of the bringing of people together and this sort of sense of togetherness and I guess group, which, you know, I think sounds quite warm and is a nice way of looking at it. And then I think it's just, and obviously I'm the description I've had of the words, I don't know these words.
But it's all been fairly close as far as you gather. It's a broadly meaning the same thing. There's not been a translation where they've gone with a completely different title that has nothing to do with the word Assembly.
No, I think it's all been sort of really interesting and just, I guess, drawing out, because I think again, this kind of comes back to it being a short novel that can be read in so many different ways. So, and I think what will resonate in the UK won't necessarily be what will resonate, well, not even necessarily within the UK, but in different countries, it might make sense to pull out something different. So it's just been really interesting to see the direction that they want to take it in.
And had they started doing translations while you were still editing, before it was published, or is that all?
yeah, with some of them.
So did any of the things the translators came back and asked you about make you change things, you know, before it was finally signed off?
Yeah, I think one thing that was spotted was one of the colleagues in the office moved, because I think I changed sort of how the floor had worked, my idea of it, and I hadn't aligned that. So that was a quick go back and continuity error, I guess, to fix. And then, yeah, some other things just kind of phrasing that was questioned, that I thought actually, yeah, it was a little bit inelegant how I'd had it, and tweaking those things. So not tons, because the point I was getting the questions, it was sort of, because everything was happening on a very tight time frame, it was kind of at the point where the manuscript should really be left alone, but there were a couple of things I was happy to be able to tweak before it went to print.
I mean, that sounds like quite a good luxury to have when you're editing, to have some people translating into just have a few people translating into various different languages. They're really pull on some threads that will be really useful.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's a fairly unusual situation to be in.
But you say you're just sort of starting the notes now for the next one. Do you have any timeframes that have been imposed on you to, like, contract or anything to get on that? Or are you able to relax and really sort of find your way through with it?
Yeah, I can absolutely take my time. I don't have any commitments to anybody, which is nice.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoyed our conversation with Natasha Brown. Do like and subscribe wherever you find podcasts, and do look back at our catalogue of previous shows. I think we've got around 40, 41, 42 now, so plenty to dig into. You can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com or on Twitter at lachlanbloom. And Unsigned Methods, we have a website at unsignedmethods.co.uk, or tweet us on Twitter at unsignedmethods.
You can find out about me and my writing at Jamie Batchin on Twitter, at Jamie_Batchin on Instagram, and my website is jamiebatchin.com with the weird spelling, which is catching a few people out when they're kind enough to mention me on Instagram and Twitter. It is Jamie with two I's, for what it's worth. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Natasha for joining us, and enjoy any holidays that you're able to take.